Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Chagiga Daf Yud Dalid. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara Marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin today's shiur 16 lines from the top of Daf Yud Dalid. We continue with a series that we started in our previous shiur, and that's indicated by the diamond marking, where the Gemara raises what appears to be a contradiction between two psukim and then resolves. So we continue now with the Gemara, the diamond. You notice Kosov Echod Oimer. One pasuk says Levushel Kislag Chivor Veseor Reshe Kaamar Nike. This is a posik from Daniel, and you'll notice the Aramaic language that's used as opposed to the Hebrew that you would find in most of the other books of the Tanakh. But for our purpose, we are going to simply emphasize the that which we've dashed underlined, word chivar. There's a vision that Daniel has of the, we'll say, the divine presence appearing with white hair, white like snow. Uksiv, there's another pasuk that says Ukvutsoisov Taltalim Shchoros Korev. The hair is described as black. So in the description of the divine presence, and of course we've mentioned in the last few dapim since the beginning of this parak, we're dealing with highly esoteric topics, and the human descriptions of that which is totally spiritual, and especially when we deal with the divine presence, is absolutely not to be taken in any literal form. But for our purposes, we have to limit ourselves to the basic translation. The deeper understanding is something we encourage everyone to pursue on their own, however. In this case, though, we have to resolve the description of being white-haired or black-haired. Lo kashya, there's no difficulty. Kan v'yeshiva, kan v'milchoma. The white hair, which suggests a sage, elder type personality, that's Yeshiva. And Rashi says, "V'litol mimenu eitza b'chol dvar chochma." Yeshiva is often associated with a place of Torah study. And Rashi points out that when addressing the divine presence as a source of wisdom and counsel, so the white hair imagery is conveyed. However, when dealing with war, where the divine spirit leads the Jewish people into war and hopefully victory, that is characterized by the black hair, which is associated with youth. In order to be an effective soldier, it is of course understood that the young individual is a more effective warrior than an elderly individual. The Omar Mar, Ein L'chonoa B'yeshiva L'zokein. It has been taught that there is nothing more desirable than an elder when it comes to yeshiva, when it comes to counsel. The Ein L'chonoa B'milchoma L'bochor. And there isn't anything more desirable in war, in, let's say, qualifying as a warrior than a bochor, youth. Kosev echad omer korsiye shaviven dinur. Ukosev echad omer ad di korsavon remin v'atik yoimin yisiv. For our purposes, we stick to the very simple level of understanding. One pasuk indicates there is one korsia, is a chair, a throne, a seat. And the other pasuk indicates two seats. Again, you're dealing with psukim that are in the Aramaic, so if the language seems unfamiliar, that is the explanation. But di korsavon, that you see in the second verse over here, that's two chairs. lo kasha, echad loi, vi echad ledavid. So the posuk that indicates two chairs, this first approach says it's one for the Almighty and the other for King David. Kivisanya, and this is illustrated or stated in the following Tanaic source where there are two opinions that are brought on this topic, on the, regarding these psukim, echad lo v'echad lo David, divrei Rabbi Akiva. So that which the Gemara reported was the opinion of Rabbi Akiva. One of the thrones is for the Almighty, and the other for King David. Omar lo Rabbi Yossi Aglili. Rabbi Yossi has a strong objection to Rabbi Akiva. He says, Akiva, ad mosai ata ois shechina choyol. Until when are you going to present the Shechina, the divine presence, in such a common fashion? In other words, by paralleling a human being as great as the person might be, but by paralleling it, the human being, to the Almighty, that's borders on the profane, and the Gemara calls it chol. Ela echad l'din ve'echad l'tzedakah. Rather, the two chairs described in the pasuk is a throne of justice and a throne of righteousness. The Gemara now asks, Kiblo minei o lo kiblo minei? Did Rabbi Akiva accept Rabbi Yossi Aglili's analysis, assigning both thrones to the Almighty? Just, he sits on one when it comes to strict judgment, and he sits on the other when it comes to his compassion and kindness. Did Rabbi Akiva accept that? Ta Shema. Now we bring another Tanaic source in which we see two opinions. The first opinion is that of Rabbi Akiva, who in fact says this answer, this resolution that Rabbi Yossi Haglili gave. However, that's not the end of the story. In this source, you see Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah objecting to this approach. So now the Gemara, Toshma, Echad l'din ve'echad l'tzedaka, Divrei Rabbi Akiva. So you see here that Rabbi Akiva did accept Rabbi Yossi Haglili's resolution. However, Omar lo Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Akiva, Ma l'cha etzel Hagoda, what are you doing within Agadic passages? Klach midivroi secha, v'lech etzel negoim v'olos. Take your words and invest your energies in the area most suited for someone of incredible intellect like yourself, the topics of Negoyim and Oholos. These are topics that require great intellectual capability, and that's where you are most suited. But Agadic topics, though there is a great amount of depth to them, it requires a different type of intellect, and your prowess is not best suited for that. Ella, so Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah goes on to say, Echad l'kiseh v'echad l'shrafraf. One of the korsavon described in the pasuk is for as a throne, and the other is as a shrafraf, a footstool. Kisei leishev alav, the throne upon which to sit, and shrafraf lahadom raglov, and the shrafraf to serve as a footstool. Shenemar, the pasuk indicates that the Almighty has these two elements. Hashemayim kisi, the heavens are my seat, are my throne. Va'oretz hadom ragloy, and the world represents my footstool. As we said again earlier, just a few minutes ago, these are highly esoteric ideas requiring much more in order to achieve a true understanding. But we go on. Ki also Ravdimi Omar Shmoina Esrei Klolos Kilo Yeshayas Yisrael. And actually, before we go on in the Gemara text, let's just glance at the side where we have our no sour topic heading. And we indicate that this topic will last till the end of the Omid, till the end of this page of Gemara. Droshas Psukim Misefer Yeshaya. The Gemara will present Psukim from the book of Isaiah. Tchilas Perek Gimel, Psukim Aleph through Zion. We'll be looking at the beginning of the third chapter of Yeshaya. Psukim Aleph through Zion. The topic focuses on Yud Ches, or 18 Klolos Shekili Yeshayas Yisrael, 18 curses that Yeshaya uttered to the Jewish people. The Gemara. He also Ravdimi Omar, when Ravdimi came, he told us, Shmoin Esrei Klolos Kilu Yishayis Israel. There are 18 Klolos that he cursed, Klolos are curses that he cursed the Jewish people. The lo niskaro daito, and he didn't feel relieved. Ad sheomar lohem amikros, until he said what's found in the following pasuk and pasuk dalid over there. Yirhavu hanar bezokein vanikle benichbad. The word yirhavu indicates haughtiness or high-handedness, and the pasuk is saying that the youth will be haughty over the elders, and the lowly, the accursed, will rule over the nichbad, the honorable ones. Rashi adds, in order to just refine our translation, the term kilo yishayis Yisrael. Rashi says klomar nisnabe alein yudches pronis. Isaiah really is prophesying 18 punishments that will befall the Jewish people. The Gemara continues. Shmoina esrei klolos mayni. What are these 18 punishments? Dichtiv. Now the Gemara presents the psukim. Psukim aleph through hey will be alluded to here. And after we read, we'll say the three lines of psukim. The Gemara, then, if you scan ahead in our markings, you can see a number of words underlined. These are quotes from the Pasuk with a Gemara explanation to translate and explain the words. So first we read three lines of Pasuk. Dichtiv, the Pasuk says, Ki hinei ha'adon Hashem tzevokos, the Almighty Lord, the Lord of hosts, Mesi Mishalayim Yehuda, will remove from Jerusalem and from Judea. And now these, as I said, words that will be dealt with later. So we have a number of words that in and of themselves represent positive things, but they're all going to be removed. They are Mash'ein u'mishano kol mish'an lechem v'chol mish'an mayim gibor v'ish milchoma shofet v'novi v'koysem v'zokein sar chamishim v'nusuponim v'yoyitz v'chochem choroshim v'novon lachash v'nosati ne'orim soreim v'ta'alulim yimshilubam. And the Gra adds V'nigasha'om ish b'ish v'ish b're'ehu. Now, the words are explained. Mish'on, who will be removed? Mish'on elu balei mikra. These are people that are expert in the scriptures. Mish'ano elu balei mishnah. These are people that are expert in the Mishnaic literature. Kegon Reb Yura ben Teimo v'chaberov. They represent the paradigm of Mishnah perfection. Pligu bo Rav Papa Rabbanan. There's a machlokus between Rav Papa and the other rabbis, Chad Omar Sheish Meyoy Sidre Mishnah, that in their times there were 600 orders of Mishnayos. We have today 6 Sdorim. So here we're talking about something greater in size 100-fold. So that there are people today that actually know the 6 orders of Mishnayos Baal Peh. They are few, but they exist. Here we're talking about 600 orders. The Chalomar, and another opinion says, not 600, but Shvameh Sidrei Mishnah. There were 700 orders of Mishnayos. Kol Mishan Lechem, Elu Balei Talmud. Mishan, technically or literally, has to be something that you rely on. Mishan Lechem, the Gemara says, Elu Balei Talmud. These are the ones expert in Talmud. Rashi says, on the third narrow line, Lechem Elu Balei Hashas. Rashi uses the word Shas. The Gemara uses the word Talmud. But it's one and the same. The Shas is abbreviation of the 6 orders comprising the Talmud. Sheyesh lismoich al ra'osan kismichas lechem. One, these kind of people, Mishan Lechem, are people upon whom you rely for their teachings and their rulings, as one relies for his physical sustenance on bread. We often refer to the bread as the staff of life. And the Gemara explains or cites a posuk indicating this relationship between lechem and Torah learning. It's pointed out It should be pointed out that the pasuk that's being quoted is from the book of Mishlei, the book of Proverbs, which is understood to be primarily mishalim, examples, analogies relating to the Torah and Torah study. So the pasuk says, "Lechu lachmu b'lachmi ushtu b'yayin masachti." So you see in this pasuk, "Lachmi," my bread, as a reference to, as we said, from the book of Mishlei, a reference to Torah. The Gemara goes on, the whole Mishan Mayim will be removed. Elu Bale Agoda, those that are expert in Agadic literature. Shemosh, now why is Mayim, Mishan Mayim, referred to as Agoda? Shemoshchen Liboy Shalodim Kemayim Be'agoda. People are drawn to these topics that are of Agadic nature, story form and parables that you find throughout the Talmud. These are areas that people tend to be, we'll call them in layman's terms, we'll refer to them as popular topics, and they are drawn to them as water flows and flows to a source, so too people are drawn to it. Gibor Elu Ze Baal Shmuos. The word Gibor refers to a warrior. Baal Shmuos, Rashi adds here, Baal Shmuos Shishoma Halochus Psukos Mirabosa Vushkurus Befiv. These are people that know legal teachings, final legal rulings, and are fluent in them. The Gemara goes on, V'ish Milchoma Ze Sheodea Lisa Velite Ben Milchamta Shotor. This is someone who's capable of engaging in Torah discussions, Torah analysis, and arguments. Shofet Ze Dayan Shidon Din Emes Lamito. This is a judge that knows how to judge accurately and honestly. Novi Kimashmo. Novi is a prophet. So we see from the psukim that we saw before, prophecy will be removed. Kosein Ze Melech. The word kosem is refers here to a king. Shenemar kesem al sifsei melech. So in the word posuk, you see kesem associated with a king. Zokain ze sheroi liyeshiva. And we saw the term before, yeshiva. Rashi says that this is someone that is fit to take from him, to receive from him counsel in all matters requiring thought. So as we mentioned before, the term, that's what the term yeshiva indicates. Sar Chamishim, the 11th klola. Al tikri sar chamishim, don't read it as that, chamishim being 50. El sar chumashim, in the scriptures, there are no vowels that appear in the actual text. The vowelization is a function of an oral tradition, so that the letters chamishim can also be read as chumashim. And the sar is a minister, one who has control over something. So what's a sar chumashim? Zesh yodeh liso v'litein b'chamisha chum shei Torah. Someone who is capable of discussion and analysis in the five books of the Torah. Dover acher sar chamishim k'de Rebbe Avo. The understanding of sar chamishim as Rebbe Avo explains. Yomar Rebbe Avo. Mikan shein mamidim meturgamon al hatzibur. From here, we don't assign a meturgamon to lecture through a rav to the public, pochos mechamishim shana, for someone that's less than 50 years of age. So chamishim, according to Rabbi Avo, is to be left as it is, sar chamishim, but it means that we don't set up a meturgamon. A meturgamon is someone that would recite to the public that which a rabbi was lecturing. We call him the human public address system. So for whom would we assign a meturgamon to transmit the teachings? We assign a meturgamon to someone who is the teacher for whom the meturgamon functions. The teacher must be no less than 50 years old. Less than that, it's not befitting to the public to be the lecturer. Unisu ponim ze shenoisim ponim ledoro bavuro lamala, or we should say lamala kagon Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa lamato kagoin Rabbi Avo Bei Kesar. The suponym represents someone who has so much by way of merits and importance that the public receives favor on through him or on his behalf. And the Gemara presents one in a heavenly fashion and one in an earthly fashion. So that what the Gemara is telling us is that from heaven's standpoint, the Almighty showed favor on the entire Jewish community because of the merit of Rabbi Hanina ben Dosa. And for more information on Rabbi Hanina ben Dosa, one is advised to study the sections at the end of Maseches Tainis that feature him and his great level of piety. So the concept of Nesuponim, someone through whom favor is shown, so when it comes to from on high, Rabbi Hanina ben Dosa represents that figure. There's also a phenomenon of favor being shown to a community because of favor being shown by the earthly powers that be, the government, because of or out of respect to a particular individual. And that also was the case with regard to Rabbi Avo, who besides as being a great rabbinic Amoraic figure, he also held a governmental position, and it may very well be that he was the official representative of the Jewish people, but we see, and Rashi quotes the Gemara, where the king's court did favors, showed kindness to the Jewish people because of Rebbe Avol. So that's the concept of Limata. We continue in the Gemara, Yoetz. What's a Yoetz? Sheyodea le'abir shonim v'ligboya chadoshim. People who are capable of intercalation in order to establish a leap year. La'abir is to extend a year. The Jewish calendar has as part of its calculations the necessity every so often of adding a full month in order to intercalate the year. This topic is dealt with at much greater length in the second parak of Maseches Sanhedrin. Also, there's also an earlier reference in Maseches Sanhedrin to that particular issue. And Likboa Chadoshim, he who knew how to deal with establishing the months. The formal establishment of Jewish months was based on sightings of new lunar phases. We continue in the Gemara. V'chacham zeh Talmid hamachkim es raboisav. Chacham is a reference to a student who's sharp, and through his questions, the teachers themselves become wiser. The pasuk made reference to a chacham choroshim, and the word choroshim is explained b'shosh sheposeach b'divrei Torah, when he opens up in words of Torah, hakol nasim kecharoshim. Everyone becomes like they become like mutes. Everyone silences. V'navon ze hamevin dovar mitoch dovar. Navon is someone who's capable of reaching conclusions from given information. He understands topics through other topics. Lachash, the pasuk spoke about a navon lachash. Zesheroi limsor lo divrei Torah. This is a person who has understanding and enough understanding that makes him fit to receive Torah learning. And the Torah is something shenitna belachash. The Torah was given in a quiet fashion. This is a point that's alluded to by the starred note on the side. Pirush bechashoy mitnei asotin. The Gemara deals with that elsewhere, if I'm not mistaken, Maseches Shabbos. But for our purposes, the term lachash, novon lachash, that we found in the pasuk, is a reference to someone who has wisdom and fit to receive Torah, which is associated with that word. Vinosati, the Gemara goes on, number 16. Vinosati neorim soreim, mai vinosati neorim soreim. what does the word Ne'orim refer to, and where the Pasuk says, I will appoint Ne'orim to be their ministers. Omer Abelazar, Elu b'nei Adam sheminu orim min ha-mitzvos. How prophetic this is, that the ministering individuals, the leadership, will be people that are minu orim, means they are shaken out of, they're emptied of mitzvos. They're people that do not keep the mitzvos. V'ta'alulim yimshulubom. The Pasuk mentions that the ta'alulim will rule over them. Omer of Acho bar Yankiv, Elu. The Elu Tali B'nei Tali. Here the translation is, these are who the rulers will be, are foxes, the children of foxes. And Rashi is terse. He simply translates the word Shu'olim, but in Torah literature, the Shu'ol, the fox, represents a certain type of person, type of individual, and even in general literature we see many references to foxes, foxy type people, and we can say with one level of assuredness that it's not complimentary. So we saw 17 punishments that were prophesied by the prophet Isaiah, Veloniskara Daito Ad Shamalem, and he wasn't quieted. He wasn't put at ease until he told them, Yirhavu hanor hanar bezokein. Elu b'nei odom sheminu orim min ha-mitzvos. This is, as we mentioned before, these are people that are shaken out of them, or they've emptied themselves from mitzvos. These kind of mitzvahless people, Yirhavu b'mishem emula b'mitzvos karimon. They will be haughty over those that are full of mitzvos, as a pomegranate is full of seeds. So that you have this very unfortunate situation of people that are so empty of Torah, ruling high-handedly over those that are so full of Torah and mitzvos. Vanikle benichbad yavo mi shechamuros domos olav kikalos. A time will come when there are those that matters that are chamuros, very serious, severe Torah matters, that people to whom those kind of matters appear as very light, insignificant things. Take, for example, Shabbos. Shabbos is a mitzvah, is an area of the Torah that occupies the highest level of severity, of importance, and that is illustrated by the fact that the Torah mandates not only a death penalty for someone who knowingly, willingly, deliberately violates Shabbos, but within Jewish law there are four levels of capital offense, and the four levels are illustrated or manifest by the four levels of court form of execution. Shabbos is the deliberate violator of Shabbos is executed by stoning, which is the highest level of severity court execution. And how unfortunate it is that people who are described here by the Gemara, people to whom Shabbos is treated very lightly. People say, what difference does it make, Shabbos, whether you keep it or you don't keep it? Each one does whatever he wants. The main thing is to be a happy person. How far from the truth can someone go? Can someone reach? But that's described right over here. People to whom Shabbos and other weighty matters are viewed as very light. V'yirhavu, and these kind of people will be haughty and rule over. B'mishe kalois doimois olav kechamuros. There are people, very pious individuals, that matters that are relatively light in severity, matters in the Torah that are not quite as significant. And if we add to our explanation, rabbinic laws, things that are obligatory only on a rabbinic level, Those are kalos. They are, relatively speaking, light matters. But these individuals described here are those that even light matters to them are very serious. So what you see described here is a topsy-turvy world where people to whom Torah matters and mitzvah observance is very, even heavy, weighty matters are very insignificant in their eyes. They will be appointed as rulers or elected as rulers over those for whom even light Torah matters are considered very significant and weighty in their eyes. Omar Rav Katina. Afilu b'shas kishlonish Yerushalayim, and here, by the way, we're beginning a point that lasts a number of lines in the Gemara, and we should also say that after he makes his point, the Gemara will attempt to challenge it. And on the side of the Gemara, we have our tat nosei, our subtopic heading, Afilu b'shas kalono shel Yerushalayim, even in the times of the embarrassment and the disgrace of Jerusalem, lo posku mehem ba'ali amona, there always remains faithful or trustworthy individuals. So this is Rav Katina's point now in the Gemara. Omer Rav Katina, Afilu b'shas kishloino shel Yerushalayim. Even at the time of the stumbling of Yerushalayim, lo posku mehem bale amona, there didn't cease from them people of trustworthiness. Shenemar, the pasuk says, ki yispois ish be'achiv. Base Aviv, Simla Lecha, Katsin Tialanu. That's the Pasuk. The Gemara will go on to explain this Pasuk. The Rashi, before we go on in the Gemara, the last third of the narrow lines of Rashi, you see, he says, Kispos Ish Be'achiv, HaKosif Hoya Meganon, Lomar Shalohoyo Yoidim Lahashiv Leshalim Halacha. We'll see how the Pasuk reaches a point where it criticizes the situation of their inability to answer questions of halacha in a proper fashion. Simple inability to answer questions. So we have this pasuk that we read already, pasuk vav, and the Gemara explains dvarim shebnei adam miskasin bohem kesimla yeshnon tachas yodach. You have a description of the public approaching someone and saying to him, you know, there are matters that people cover themselves over like with a dress. Now, what does that mean? They hide themselves so as to avoid being asked questions, very simply because they are not expert in it. A person who doesn't know the answers doesn't want to be asked questions. So the Pasuk is describing those people who hide because of their feeling that they are ignorant, and they talk. The pasuk describes the public addressing someone saying yeshnon tachas yodecha, meaning you know those matters. The pasuk goes on, v'machshela hazois, goes on to say in the pasuk tachas yodecha, my v'machshela hazois. What does that mean? Literally, it's a stumbling block. Dvarim she'ein b'nei adam oimdim aleihem. Topics, matters that people don't literally stand upon them, means that people don't fully understand them or know them. Elim kein nichshav bohen, unless they first made a mistake. Everyone might have had this experience where there was an issue, a problem they were trying to solve, and they got the wrong answer, and they eventually the same problem arose later on, after having previously got the wrong answer and being shown the right answer, when asked on a subsequent occasion presented with the same problem, they then get the right answer. How is that? Because once having made a mistake and then being shown the right way, the next time a person will know it better. Rashi says they make the mistake once and twice, but eventually those kind of areas that a person made mistakes over and finally got it and finally were presented with the right answer, that those are things that people know very well. So the public was saying to them that matters that people don't understand until they make mistakes over them, yeshnon tachas yodecha, you know them. So what are we describing? We're describing the public turning to a person or turning to certain people, saying to them, "There, we need leadership, we need help, we need counsel, or we need someone to teach us Torah and provide for us Torah rulings, topics and issues that so many don't know, they avoid, they hide from the challenges. You know them." The pasuk goes on to say, "Yisav yamahu leimar," and on that day they would say, "Lo eye choyvesh ubevesi ein lechem vein simla lo tesimuni katsin om." And now this pasuk is broken down and explained. Yisav, the word Yisav that appeared here, ein Yisav eloshen shvul. The word Yisav indicates someone swearing, taking an oath. Shnema lo Yisav es shem Hashem elokecha. That from the Ten Commandments, that pasuk indicates do not swear in the name of the Almighty in a false fashion. But you see the word Yisav or Tisav in the context of oaths. My lo eye chovesh. What does that mean? Lo hoyisi michoyshe beis hamedrash. I was not from those that sat, that attached myself to the beis hamedrash, the Torah study center. Ubevesi ein lechem vein simla. She'ein biyodi lo mikra v'lo mishna v'lo gemara. You're asking me to issue rulings on behalf of the public for the benefit of the public, but I don't have scriptures in me. I don't know mishnayos and I don't know gemara. Now this is the point. This is the end of the long point that Rav Katina was making. Though we're dealing with this very dismal period of an accursed period, as the prophet was prophesying, nevertheless, in those times, even in those dark times, people of honesty did not cease to exist. So that even though they were being sought out for their guidance and Torah leadership, they confessed. They were honest, and they said, "You think we know, or that we are capable of issuing halachic rulings? We don't know. We didn't study." That shows that people were honest. That there were, or put it this way, that there remained honest individuals. Now the Gemara goes on with a give and take, and we use a triangle marking in alternating directions on under the mivneh. On the side, we indicate a ma'akav, an attempt to keep track. The triangle pointing up represents Kushyos questions, and the inverted triangle, the Tshuvos responses. So the Gemara now questions. Rav Katina says, from the psukim that we cited, you see that there always remained honest individuals. The Dilma, you might say, that's not an indication of honesty. Shiny Hassam, that's different. When they confessed that they did not know, they had no choice. They had to confess they didn't know. The Omar Luhu, if they would have lied and said, Gamirno, yeah, I'm educated, I'm knowledgeable, Amri lay, they and the public would have said, "Aim alone, then tell us the answer." And if the person doesn't know what to respond, he's going to make himself look like a fool if he claims that he knows. So the psukim aren't describing people that were honest for the sake of honesty. They said what they did for the sake of self preservation. That's not a sense of honesty. The Gemara says, not true. They were honest people, because if they were simply trying to avoid being put on the spot, have lay lemeimar, they should have said, or they could have said, gomar v'shochach. Oh, yeah, sure, I learned that, but I forgot. My lo eye chovesh. What was meant when they said lo eye chovesh? Lo eye chovesh klal. That means I didn't learn at all. That's a sign of honesty. The Gemara asks, "Aini, is that what Rav Katina said? Is that really true?" V'amar Rava, "Lo charvu Yishlaim at shepasko mimenu balei amona." Jerusalem wasn't destroyed until there ceased from its midst honest people. Shenemar, "Shaitetu b'chutzos Yishlaim, uruno du vakshu b'chovesei im emtsa ish im yesh oisa mishpat mevakish emuno ve'eslachlo." The Almighty says, go through the streets of Jerusalem and find me an honest individual, and because of his honesty, I will forgive and spare Jerusalem. But we know, and we know Jerusalem was destroyed. So it would indicate there was there wasn't an honest individual to be found. Loi kasha. No, there isn't any question from what that which Rava presents, or that which the Gemara presents in the name of Rava, is not a kasha. It's not a challenge to Rav Katina. Lo kasha. Ha b'divrei Torah, ha b'maso maton. There are two different realms. There's the realm of Torah study, and there's the realm of business dealings. B'divrei Torah havu. With regard to matters of Torah scholarship, there were people that were honest that would said we never learned that. When it comes to people that dealt in business, there b'masmat and lohavu, to find an honest businessman at that time, someone in his business dealings remained honest, that you could not find. We continue now, but before we continue in the Gemara text, we glance at the side of the Nosei, the topic heading, which reads, Maisim Shel Tanoim Shedorshu B'Maisa Merkava. We'll see some incidents, some stories of Tanoim that lectured on that topic, the topic of Merkava, which we've been discussing since the, more or less, since the beginning of the Perek. This very, we'll say, divine, lofty vision that the prophet Yechezkel had concerning that which exists in the heavens. Of course, we saw right at the very beginning that of this perek in the first Mishnah that one is not to darshan, one is not to lecture on the topic of Merkava, even to one, with some additional qualifications that you could see there in the Mishnah. Tana Rabbanan, Maisib Rabin Yochan Ben Zakkai, She'eroichev ala chamor, V'yotzi Mirshalayim, V'yimalech Bederech. It's an incident, a story with Rabbi Yochan Ben Zakkai. He was riding on a donkey, and he left Yerushalayim, and he was on the road. Rabbi Elazar ben Aruch, Mechamer Acharov, Lumoy Torah Mipiv, and Rabbi Elazar ben Aruch was riding on his donkey, following Rabbi Yochan Ben Zakkai. Omar Lo, Rebbe Shonali Perek Echad B'Maisim Merkava. Rabbi Elazar ben Aruch addresses Rabbi Yochan Ben Zakkai, says, would you please teach me a chapter in this topic of Merkava? Omar Lo, so Rabbi Yochan Ben Zakkai says back, Lo Kach Shanisi Lachem, did I not teach you the following, V'lo B'Merkava B'Yochid, that one is not to lecture on the topic of Merkava even to a single person, Elim Keno Yol Chochem Meivin Midaito, unless he was someone that's wise and capable of understanding things on his own. Omar Lo, so Rabbi Elazar ben Aruch says back, Rebbe, Tarsheni Lomar Lefanecha Dover Echad Sheli Maditani, allow me to tell you one thing that you taught me in Maisa Merkava. Omar Lo Emor, so Rabbi Elazar says, if that's the case, then say, hold forth. Miad Yorad Rabbi Zecham Zakkai Me'al HaChamor. At this point, right before Rabbi Elazar ben Aruch was going to hold forth and on Maisa Merkava, so Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai gets off the donkey, v'nis'atef, and he cloaks himself, v'yoshav alo evan tachas azayas, and he sat on a stone under an olive tree. By the way, you can see there's a great deal of hidden information in a source like this, and you have many sources throughout the Shas of this nature. There's a great amount of tangential, of seeming irrelevant detail, and the Talmud is not a novel or a book written by some popular author, which though books of that genre are characterized naturally by all kinds of descriptive information for the sake of creating an atmosphere. That's not the role of the Talmud. So that every word here, starting from the beginning of the story, that he was riding on a donkey. So one has to analyze, what does the donkey represent? And it said he left Jerusalem and was walking on the road. What's the significance of knowing that, of leaving Jerusalem while on the donkey? There are those that would possibly say in a homiletical fashion that the chamor, the donkey, comes from the word chomriut, Chomer. Chomer means substance. Chomriut is the physical world. And that one who rides upon the physicality, who places all of his body, his whole person, his whole being into the realm of Chomriut, of physicality, he departs from Jerusalem. Jerusalem represents the center of Torah learning, of spirituality. Jerusalem is the spiritual capital of the world, so to speak. It's Kimi Tzion Tetzesor. We say that there comes forth from Tzion Zion, which is another name for Jerusalem. Torah comes forth from there. So that the description of one who rides on the Chomriut, who rides on the physicality, who dedicates, who immerses himself in physicality, he's also that's tantamount to departing from the world of spirituality. That's just a we'll call it a sample, and I'm not saying that that's what it means over here, but it's a sample of what these seemingly insignificant, innocent-looking words might mean. And here you have him sitting on a stone under an olive tree. What's the significance of those things? But again, we're in Gemara markings, Daf Yomi. We are not here to dwell on those topics as important as they actually are. So Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai, we see getting off his donkey and cloaking himself, sitting under this on the tree, on under the olive tree on a stone. Amar lo Rabbi, mipnei ma yoradta me'achamor. So Rabbi Elazar ben Aruch sees all of this happening. So why'd you get off the donkey? Omar. So Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai says, Efshar ata derish maisa merkova u'shchinim onu. Could it possibly be that you're going to lecture on this very holy topic of merkova and the divine presence is amongst us? U'malachi ashrois malavin oisanu, when the service angels are accompanying us, v'ani erkov ala chamor, and I should be riding on a donkey. And as we suggested before, for those of you who are willing to accept that suggested analysis, of course, if the chamor is the world of physicality, it stands as practically contradictory. A person who immerses himself and presents the world of physicality as a goal. Judaism is not opposed to enjoying the world of the physical. Judaism has a lot of room for that, but to make it one's life's goal, that's what all of one's being is centered on, that is a problem. So Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai is saying that to be in a world of physicality and that should be the thing upon which I'm riding, I'm enveloped in it, I put all my weight on that, and at the same time to hear words of lofty spirituality with the divine presence and servants angels in our midst, those are contradictory. I can't possibly remain in that situation. Miad posach Rabbi Elazar ben Aruch b'maisa merkava. And Rabbi Elazar ben Aruch begins to hold forth as he said he would in this topic, the Dorash, and he lectured on it in the presence of his master, Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai. The Yorda Eish min Hashamayim, a fire came down from heaven, v'sivivah kol ilonos shebesodeh, and it surrounded all of the trees that were there in the field. Poschu kol ilonos kulon v'yomru shira. And all of the trees broke forth in song of praise. Ma shira amru. And what did they say? And here you have a posuk from the end, close to the end of Sefer Tehillim, which those of you who daven daily the Psukei Dezimra section of the morning prayers will be very familiar with this posuk. Hallelu es Hashem in Oretz, Taninim v'chol Tohimois, Eitz Pri v'chol Arozim, Halleluka. The posuk indicates all kinds of creatures from the depths, all kinds of trees, fruit-bearing trees, and other kinds of trees praising the Lord. Nene malach min ha'esh v'omar, and a malach responded, called out from the fire and said, "Hein hein ma'isa merkava, that which you are saying, that you Rabbi Elazar ben Aruch are saying, that in fact is the ma'isa merkava. You're saying words of truth concerning that topic." Omar Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai v'noshka al roishoy, And Rabbi Yochanan Azaki arose and kissed Rabbi Lozer ben Aruch on his head. V'yomar Baruch Hashem Elokei Yisrael Shenosan ben Lavrom Avinu. Blessed be the Almighty, the God of Israel, who gave a son and offspring to Abraham, our patriarch. Sheyodei Lohovin V'lachkor V'lidrosh B'maisim Merkava K'Rabbi Lozer ben Aruch. Someone who is so capable of understanding and analyzing and lecturing on the topic of the Merkava. Someone like Rabbi Lozer ben Aruch. There are those that know how to lecture, but are not they're not quite capable of fulfilling that which they lecture on. Those that are diligent in fulfilling, but they don't know how to teach, they don't know how to lecture. Avol Elozer ben Aruch, Noe Doresh, Venoe Mekayim. You know how to lecture, and you also are someone that's pious and fulfills that which he learns. Ashrecha Avraham Avinu, fortunate are you, Avraham Avinu, our patriarch Abraham, Shelozer ben Aruch, Yotzameh Halotzecha, that Elozer ben Aruch is a descendant that came forth from your loins. Ukshenemru Hadvorim Lefnei Rabbi Yeshua. And when this was told to Rabbi Yeshua, Hayahuv Rabbi Yossi HaKoyin Mahalchem Baderech, he and Rabbi Yossi were on the road. Omru Af Anu Nidrosh B'Maisim Merkava. They said, we too will hold forth on this topic. Pasach Rabbi Yeshua V'Dorash B'Maisim Merkava. Rabbi Yeshua started to hold forth to lecture on the topic. V'Yossi HaYom Tkuvas Tamuz Hoya, and it was in the middle of the summer. And the summer in Eretz Yisrael, where this story is taking place, is characterized by no rainfall, as opposed to the Western Hemisphere, when thunder showers and rain drizzle is characteristic of throughout the entire year. And in Israel, from roughly after Pesach till around Sukkot time, the summer season, there is no rain. It's very unusual for there to be any precipitation. And yet, on this occasion, when Rabbi Yeshua was holding forth regarding Merkava, Miskashu, Tkufas Tamuz, as we said, is the middle of the summer. The heavens became overcast, Miskashu Shemai Ba'avim, V'nira Kemin Keshes Ba'onan, and there appeared to be a rainbow in the sky. The Hoyu Malachi Hashoris Miskapsin Ubon Nishmo Maisim Merkava. The service angels gathered together to hear this topic. Kivnei Odom Shem Miskapsin Ubon Lirois B'Mazmutei Chosim V'Kala. Similar to the way people gather together at a wedding when there are all kinds of forms of entertainment that are demonstrated in the front of a bride and groom. When that imagery helps to show what the malachim were doing here, gathering together in that way to hear the words of Rabbi Yeshua in Maisim Merkava. Halach Rabbi Yossi HaKoyin, the Sipur Dvarim Lefnei Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai. Rabbi Yossi HaKoyin told this over to Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai, V'yomar Ashreichem V'Ashrei Yoldaschem. Fortunate are you, and fortunate are those that bore you. Ashrei einai shikachro, fortunate are my eyes that saw thusly. V'afani v'atem b'chalomi, and likewise you and myself and you were in my dream. Mesubin hoyinu al har Sinai, we were gathered around Mount Sinai. Mesubin literally is we were reclining around Mount Sinai. Nosna aleinu. Baskoil min Hashemayim v'yomar, and a heavenly voice came from heaven and said, "Alulakan, alulakan, come up here, come up here." Traklim gedolim muchonim lochem, there are great palaces awaiting you. Matzois nois mutzos lochem, and fine bedding is prepared for you. Atem v'tamidechem v'tamidetamidechem zumonim lekat shlishis. You and your students and the students of your students are invited, invited and there is prepared for you to be a member of the third group. That's a obviously a reference to something of a, we'll say, a very spiritual nature, that the third group, what that represents is, of course, something like all these other matters that needs to be looked into. I can only point out that the Gemara in Maseches Sukkah and elsewhere in the Shas makes reference to many, many thousands of rows of tzaddikim in heaven, and if there's any connection between that and this, so being a member of the third group is something of great significance. The Gemara continues, Eini is that which we've learned till now, is this really so? V'hotanya, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, and exactly what is being brought into question, let us immediately say that in the story that we learned before, at the very beginning, we were introduced to Rabbi Elazar ben Aruch, who lectured on the topic of Maisa Merkava, and that's what we want to ask, is that particular detail accurate? The Hotanya, we have the following source, Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Shloisha Hartzos, saying there were three that lectured and concerning Maisa Merkava. Rabbi Yeshua Hirtza Dvorim Lifnei Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai. We know that Rabbi Yeshua lectured in front of Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai concerning Maisa Merkava. Rabbi Akiva Hirtza Lifnei Rabbi Yeshua, and likewise Rabbi Akiva lectured in front of Rabbi Yeshua. Notice that we're moving ahead a generation, so that you have Rabbi Yeshua speaking concerning Maisa Merkava to Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai, and now Rabbi Yeshua will become the receiver, who will be the listener of Rabbi Akiva, who was the next generation. And continuing in this scheme, Hananya ben Chachinoy hirtzol lifnei Rabbi Akiva, whereas Rabbi Akiva was the one who was saying over to Rabbi Yeshua, now Rabbi Akiva becomes the listener. So those are Tanoim that are on record as having lectured on Maisa Merkava. V'ilu, Rabbi Elazar ben Aruch, lo kachashiv, we don't see in this list Rabbi Elazar ben Aruch, and yet in the source before we saw Rabbi Elazar ben Aruch lecturing to Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai. In this source we saw Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai being lectured to, or being spoken to, but it was by Rabbi Yehoshua. The Gemara answers, as far as this source is concerned, the Artsi v'Artsu Kamei Kochoshiv. What this source wants to list are people that lectured and were lectured to. The Artsi v'lo Artsu Kamei lo Kochoshiv. But people who lectured but were not lectured to are not mentioned. Therefore, it remains accurate that Rabbi Elazar ben Aruch held forth on Maisa Merkava speaking to Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai, but we don't have any record of someone speaking or lecturing on Maisa Merkava to Rabbi Elazar ben Aruch. The Gemara asks, Eini, is that true? In other words, the way in order to, let's say, be qualified for being present in this last source, so you said you have to be someone that lectured and was lectured to. Hananya ben Achachinui. Here you have an example of someone who lectured but wasn't lectured to. Delo artsu kamei v'kochoshiv. He wasn't lectured to, but he's mentioned. He's mentioned as someone who lectured. So why couldn't Rabbi Elazar ben Aruch be mentioned? And the fact that he's not mentioned shows there's something inaccurate. And one says, no, that's not a question. As far as Hananya ben Chachinoy is concerned, the Artsi miho kamei man da Artsi. He spoke to someone that had been himself a speaker. So he lectured to someone. That's the Artsi miho. That's Hananya ben Chachinoy. He had lectured to someone who had once been a speaker. So Rabbi Akiva embodies someone who lectured and was lectured to, and that is enough to enable Rabbi enable Hananiah ben Chachinoi to be included here. Before we go on, we glance at the side. We have a topic heading. It's Arba Shenichnasu Bepardes. You can see, by way of markings, when you look in our Gemara, when our marked Gemara text, we have a rare appearance of a firebox marking around Arba Nichnasu Bepardes. On the side, that's what we've called this by way of topic heading, the Arba Shenichnasu Bepardes. It's a very, very well-known Gemara. It involves four figures, towering figures. When I say four, I'm hesitating. Three, certainly. The fourth individual is someone that is, a little, we'll say, questionable. And literally, four that entered Pardes. Pardes is literally an orchard, but it represents, we'll say, a entering a heavenly experience. Rashi says they went up to heaven through noting the name, the ineffable name of Hashem. Tosfos says Lo olu lamala mamash elohaya niralem kemo shalu v'chein pirush ba'oruch. It appeared to these four as if they were in heaven, but they didn't actually go there. And the Gemara describes that each one had a different experience there in this heavenly event. Tanu Rabbana. Arba nichnasu bepardes. And by the way, we should also note that the term pardes you find referred to as an abbreviation of four levels of Torah explanation. The four levels being pshat, see the word, the pei. Pshat is the simple or superficial presentation. Remez, something that's hinted to. Drash is something that's of a deeper, we'll say, analytical nature, and sod, samach sod, the secrets of Torah, the mystical level of understanding of Torah. So pardes has this Torah study connotation, and hence its association with the, we'll say, this heavenly experience. So who are the four? V'elohein Ben Azai, Ben Zoma, Acher, Rabbi Akiva. Now, Acher isn't technically speaking a regular name. We'll see how the individual got this name, Acher, in the course of the Gemara, the next Omid. But Acher was born as Elisha Ben Avuya. So these four individuals entered Pardes. Omar Lahem, Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva addressed the three others and says, "Kshatem magim etzel avnei shayish tohar." When you arrive at the pure marble stones, they're very shiny stones. And again, we're dealing here with something that's purely spiritual, but words that describe the physical are used here. And as we said already a number of times, we're limited in our Gemara markings shear to the translation level at this point. So Rabbi Akiva says to them, when you get to the shining marble stones, Hizaru She'al Toimru Mayim Mayim, don't say, oh, we've reached water. Water also reflects, has a shiny aspect to it, but don't say there's water over here. And then Rashi adds, Yesh Kan, there's water here, Eich Neilech, how can we possibly continue? Don't say that. Mishum Shenemar, because if you say regarding shining marble and call it water, you're lying. Shenemar Doiver Shkorim Lo Yikoin Leneged Einai. The speaker of falsehoods will not be established in front of me, says the Almighty. Ben Azai Heitzitz Umeis. Ben Azai, he glanced. Heitzitz is to look upon or gaze upon. He looked upon the divine presence, and that was overpowering, was too much, and it caused him to die. Olova kosev omer yokor b'nei Hashem hamovso lachasidov. Rashi says yokor b'nei Hashem hamovso lachasidov huksha misoso lefonov. It was the word yokor can mean heavy, something that's difficult, something that's unpleasant. So it was unpleasant and difficult for the Almighty, so to speak, his death, the death of Ben Azai. Lefi Shemes Bochur, he died young. Ve'afal Pikein, Ief Sheshelo Yomus. Nevertheless, he had to die. Mishum Shenemar Ki Lo Yirani Adam V'chai. He gazed upon the divine presence, and the Pasuk says, one cannot behold me, perceive me, and remain alive. So Ben Azai had reached some type of very lofty level of divine understanding, and that was it. He couldn't continue. He had to die. Ben Zoma hates its v'nifga. Ben Zoma, he also looked. He looked upon something, glanced, or had say, perceived something, and it made him lose his sanity. The expression that is used, nifga, by Rashi says nitrifadaito. He lost it. He became unbalanced or insane. The olova kosev omer regarding him, the pasuk says dvash motzasa echol dayecha pentis baenu v'hikaso. Dvash is something that's sweet, something that's enjoyable. It's understood in translation level as honey. You found honey, you found something very sweet, eat, but just enough. Do not consume too much, do not become oversatisfied with it, and then end up throwing up. Acher Kitzeitz Benetios. Acher, we said, was really, his original name was Elisha Ben Avuya. Kitzeitz Benetios. Literally, it means he cut down. Netios are saplings. He did something. He came to wrong, to erroneous conclusions. Rabbi Kiva yotze b'shalom, and Rabbi Kiva, he entered and he exited. Yotze, he exited b'shalom in peace, in fulfillment. He knew his boundaries, and he knew how to deal with this experience. And now the Gemara on our marking wise, we have a mivne, structural note on the side, the double underline. We didn't point out, I think I overlooked pointing out the firebox marking. I mentioned that we have it here. It's a rare marking, but we use this when the topic that will be dealt with will keep us preoccupied for at least an omen of Gemara. And we have here from this point till certainly the entire next omid, not only the next omid, but the entire daf Tes Vav will be alluding to the figures that we saw in this source, so that the firebox marking is warranted. As we said, the Mivneh heading that we have here with a double underline, which highlights the expression Shoalu Es Ben Zoma. Questions were presented to Ben Zoma, and in the context of this Gemara, this is to be understood as the Ben Zoma in the context of the Arba Nichnasu B'Pardes, and the house marking, you could see, highlights the word Mahu. That's the actual question. So now let's turn to the Gemara. Shalu as Ben Zoma, Mahu Lisrusei Kalbo. Is one allowed to sterilize? Sirus is sterilizing a kalba, a dog. Omer Lahem, he responded, Uva Artzachem Lo Sasu. The Rashi, Shalu as Ben Zoma Malus Rusi Kaba Hoyl the Sirusi Ksive Tsumume Korban. Sirus is mentioned as a blemish in the context of sacrifices. For Kelev, now a dog is an animal that you cannot offer as a sacrifice. However, it appears in the context of sacrifices. Regarding a dog, we say afilu chalifov osur lemizbeach mishum mechir kelev. If, let us say, someone exchanged a sheep, which is an animal that's fit as a sacrifice on the temple altar, and he gave someone a sheep in exchange for that individual's dog. So the receiver of the sheep, the former dog owner, the receiver of the sheep will not be allowed to offer that sheep as a sacrifice. That's called mechir kelev, which the Torah explains as being something that is forbidden, presents that as something forbidden as a sacrifice. So the you see then that the dog is something that, that can generate prohibition upon an animal as being a sacrifice. And sterilization is something that would render an actual sacrifice as unfit. What about imposing this mum, or doing this, sterilizing a dog? So Ben Zoma answers, Omer lehem, uba'artzichem lo yisasu, that you shall not do that. Kol sheba'artzichem lo sasu, in all creatures you shall not do that. You shall not sterilize animals, regardless of whether they're fit as sacrifices or not. Shalu as Ben Zoma, b'sulosh ibro mahu l'kohen gadol. Ben Zoma was asked about a besula, that a besula is a virgin that became pregnant. You must wonder, are they almost, they're almost contradictory terms. A virgin is not someone that would become pregnant, but there's more to it than meets the eye. So the question that was posed to Ben Zoma was, a woman that is still a virgin but is pregnant, can she marry a Kohen Gadol? Now, just a word about the rules of marriage regarding a Kohen Gadol. Kohen Gadol, the high priest, he is rather limited in the women that can serve as a wife. The number of candidates for serving as a spouse for a Kohen Gadol is limited. For example, a widow is someone that a Kohen Gadol cannot marry. In addition to the fact that he's a Kohen and cannot marry a divorcee, he cannot marry a widow either. And in addition to that, there's a positive command in the Torah, stated as a mitzvah saseh, that the kind of woman that he must marry is a besula, a virgin. What about a virgin that is pregnant? A virgin, of course, is a woman. Here we have to be rather, we have to be technical and anatomical, if you will, that there is a piece of skin or membrane or tissue matter that in the woman's the entrance to the woman's reproduction area, that membrane is present prior to any acts of intimacy. Under normal circumstances, the act of intimacy would remove that particular membrane that seals off the entrance to the woman's reproductive area. Is it possible for male seed to enter the woman without the breaking or the removal of the basulim? Now, let us emphasize that if there was a male organ insertion, that would render the woman as unfit for a Kohen Gadol. Intimacy with a woman would make her such that she's not fit to be with the Kohen Gadol. Here we're dealing with a rather unique situation, or issue is raised. Could there be intimacy without the breaking of the basulim? The Gemara continues. Two possibilities here. Do we say, Aleph, mi chayshinon ledishmuel? Do we consider, do we take into consideration that which Shmuel describes? Yomar Shmuel, yochol ani liv'oil kama be'ilos belodam. We're here at the top line of Daf Tes Vav Amud Aleph. Shmuel testifies regarding himself that he was capable, because of his, some type of skill that he had or had developed, he was able to conduct himself in the act of intimacy in a, what's called hatoya. Hatoya literally means in a tilted fashion, in a whatever it was, but in some type of a positioning of himself, he would be able to do the act of intimacy below dam, means without causing any blood flow, namely the breaking of that skin or tissue membrane, which ordinarily does tear away in the first act of intimacy, or in an initial act of intimacy. But Shmuel says, I could do that, I can do the act of be'ilah without producing any dam. So when we hear about a woman who is pregnant and claims she's still a basula, do we say, okay, she had intimacy with a man that did something like Shmuel says? Now, if that were the case, well, then she would not be fit to the Kohen Gadol. Oidilma de Shmuel Oshichor, possibility basis that no. What Shmuel describes is something that's very, very unlikely, very unusual, and it's not something that we would consider. So that if it's something that we would not consider, yet we have a woman that is pregnant, and we also have her as still have being a basula, so there must be some other way she became pregnant without having experienced intimacy. And if so, it would seem then that she would be fit to marry a Kohen Gadol. Omar Luhu, so the Ben Zoma, who was asked the question about a Basula Shehibra, so he answered them that the Shmuel lo Shachiach, the situation described by Shmuel called Hatoya, as we mentioned before, and Rashi makes reference to it, is a very unusual thing. It's not common, and therefore in our mind she is still an actual basula. And you'll ask, well, how did she become pregnant? V'chayshinun shema ba'ambati ibra. We suspect that maybe she had entered a pool of water, that moments before the woman was there, there was a man, and the man released his male seed into the pool, and the woman entered that same spot, and the male seed entered her body, thereby fertilizing and producing a pregnancy. So the woman is a still full-fledged basula without having had any intimate contact with a man, and yet she becomes pregnant. The Gemara asks Varmar Shmuel, how can this possibly be, when Shmuel teaches kol shichva zera she'eno yoyra kechetz eino mazra'as, that any shichva zera, male seed, semen, that's not shot forth like an arrow, does not produce pregnancy, does not impregnate. The Gemara says, Dilma me'ikaranami, yora kecheitz havei. It could very well be that the man that was entered the pool, when he had this seed release, it was released in this, we'll call, forceful fashion, like as yora kecheitz implies, and that's all that really matters. It's not of concern, or it's not a binding factor that it has to enter the woman at the very moment that the man is releasing the seed, but rather that the seed, when released from the man, was released in this into the water, in this case, in a forceful fashion. That is, that represents a type of seed that is capable of producing reproduction. It's interesting, this kind of Gemara, just on the translation level, might sound certainly hundreds of years ago would have sounded preposterous to the untrained ear. But when you think about modern techniques in fertility treatment, the whole concept of fertilization and impregnation through means other than straightforward physical intimacy between male and female, as being in fact a reality, you see that alluded to, hinted to by the Chazal. And it goes without saying that the Chazal, the teachings of the rabbis that we find in our oral tradition, were undoubtedly of a divine, practically prophetic nature. So take that into consideration when learning this Gemara, as well as any other Gemara throughout the Shas, that you're dealing with teachings that come from a divine source, and all that implies. Before we conclude today, if you wish to be if you wish to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.